Hello, friends. I'm Lee Brown. This is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And today we're going to talk some more about self-storage, including some educational bits for you. A jaw dropper of what was found in a self-storage unit and more from Scott Crone. So enjoy the conversation. All of his stuff is in the show notes for this episode. I'll see you on the other side. You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in. Welcome to the show. Tell my audience a little bit about you, where you're located, what you've done and land in the real estate space.
I began my career in getting my master's in architecture, and I was fortunate enough to work for my professor, who was a real estate developer and also an architect and builder. So I got really hands-on experience. I began the multifamily world, and then in 98, I started our own company, Coded Design Build, and we were doing development, design, and build, and then the crash came, and we began moving into more of the commercial space. And I saw the massive cap compression in multifamily. And that's when I moved into self-storage. And we've been developing and converting and expanding self-storage facilities since 13.
All right. So the bulk of my audience is consumers. Okay. And so when you say things like cap compression, you probably just blurred them off the episode. So hang in there, consumers. He'll explain this to you real quickly. So talk like you're talking to normal people, because I do have a lot of realtors and investors that come to the show. But I have a lot of people that are just interested in the backstory of different angles of real estate.
Absolutely. So for those that might not know cap rate, it's a commercial tool to analyze how strong or good an investment is.
And capitalization. Cap stands for capitalization, everybody.
Right. It's basically the income divided by the value. And so it's a little backwards in the sense that the lower the cap rate, the smaller the number, the better the investment. So you want to buy at a high cap rate and sell at a low cap rate. So if you buy like at a 10 or 12 and sell at a 5, you have either a 5 or 7% difference in the valuation. And basically what it is the cash on cash investment rate of return. So if you invest $100,000, then you expect to make $5,000 if you have a 5 cap.
And for the record, this is why you want a realtor who knows investments when you're making these kind of investments. If you hire a realtor who does not know cash on cash return or cap rate as part of their vocabulary, go find somebody else. Because with 1.6 million of us out there, you could find a representative if you're not ready to do this on your own, because this is kind of technical information, but it's super important when you're dropping money into these spaces.
Absolutely. So cap compression is that the greater the demand, the lower the cap rate. And so the value, people are willing to pay more and more for an asset, but they're not making any more and more on their income off of it. And so what happens is it becomes, you gain less rate of return on your investment, and it becomes more and more risky because of the fact that you're, instead of getting 5%, you might be getting 3%. And so when everyone was buying multifamilies, everyone was driving up the price, but the income on it was staying the same. And so as a result of it, the cap rates were becoming more and more smaller, and that is cap compression.
Well, and of course, that's market by market. In my area, I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. Where are you located?
I'm Chicago, but I'm going to be heading to Charlotte very soon.
Oh, well, there you go. So number three fastest growing area. So if you look at multifamily, if you're buying C-class properties, which would be not so great, not updated, or B-class properties, which are pretty good, but not updated, you can still get really great returns. But that A stuff, man, the hedge funds have swooped in and taken that over. And you're exactly right. The returns aren't there anymore. But you're talking their risk-reward ratios. And multifamily by its nature, it's a different kind of investment than self-storage. And I find that a lot of investors seem to think that whatever vein they're in is the only vein of investment. So they think about the old 1% rule, but that's single family investing. And then you look at multifamily, oh, it's still lower risk than single family, honestly, but now you got to look at class ratings of buildings. Then you look at commercial, warehouse, industrial, but self-storage is where you landed. And I'd love to know how you went from an architecture class to self-storage. Did you give up on all your design, or were you working in design for self-storage, or how exactly did your developer professor sneak you in that angle?
Well, he didn't. I was all in multifamily. So for 6 years, I worked exclusively in multifamily. And so my master's thesis was a $100 million project. It was like 400 condominiums, townhomes, and single family homes. And then when we started Coded Design Build, we were strictly on the single family, multifamily mixed use. But there really isn't that much difference between self-storage and multifamily, because if the way I look at it, it's apartments without toilets. And so I don't have to worry about getting the calls in the middle of the night that someone has had a really fun evening and then they come home and then smash the toilet or done something to it and it's not working. I don't have to worry about those sorts of calls. And so in essence, we're renting a similar thing. We're renting a box. And my box is just the most simplistic version of a box. But yes, my design criteria is about, 1% of what it used to be. And so I can design the entire facility in a couple hours versus a couple days.
And that's probably with dimensions in a couple of hours, because I can probably draw one on the back of my envelope right here. But you probably can build off of that, let's be honest.
Yeah, so, I think a little too much credit there.
Did you work in anything else besides real estate, or you went straight from college into real estate? Because that's an unusual path. We don't often see people go straight into real estate.
Yeah, I mean, during college, I did different internships. So I was in development in terms of fundraising, working for Northwestern University, and I was also in the banking world. So I learned the business background during my college days. But then when I began getting my master's in architecture, I just went directly into real estate. So I've never been in anything else since then.
Hey, y'all, just going to take a quick break from this conversation to let you know about the sponsor of today's episode. That sponsor is, well, frankly, it's me. It's Lee Brown University. It's no secret that real estate is crazy competitive, getting more so every day. And that's why I created Lee Brown University. Each of you has different goals. There's something in my course that's going to help you break through. So enroll in Lee Brown University today. You go to www.leebrownu.com and I'll see you there. Now, back to this amazing content. All right. So the premise of the show is, of course, the crazy shit in real estate. My guests come here to say, what, when they hear a story. And obviously, with self-storage, most people's only relationship to it, besides maybe renting their own 10 by 20, is watching Storage Wars and wondering about all those auctions. And so when you start working in this space, I'm sure that you've met some interesting people or seen some scenarios that made you shake your head. So I can't wait to hear what story you brought for us today, Scott.
I can't claim it as my own, but the craziest story that I've heard within self-storage is, I have a friend, he has a facility out in rural Massachusetts. It's like an hour from Boston. And this guy, had a facility, had a unit for a year, and all of a sudden he stopped paying. And he was trying to get hold of the guy, And after a couple months, he finally got hold of him. And he said, hey, I'm going to put your locker up for auction. And he goes, well, you can just have it. And he goes, what are you talking about? He goes, well, I got a DUI. And so I can't drive. My license has been suspended. And there's no public transportation out there. And there's a BMW 2002 double I in the unit. And you can just have it. And so it wasn't a 2002 model. I mean, it was the model, not the year. And so here was this classic retro car that was just in this locker that the guy just said, you can have it. And so that's the Storage Wars. They're not that great of stories, generally speaking. I mean, 50% of our investors are companies and 50% are people that are looking for a little extra space. And so there's not these gold mines that you typically find, but that was a gold mine, a BMW.
How did he blow on his breathalyzer that he gave up on a car? Did they take his license away forever? Because who does that? Or was he still drunk when your guy got him on the phone?
He may have been. He may have not given up the alcohol and kept on going. So I'm not sure.
Right. So we watched that show and my kids love watching it with me. They're teenagers and they find it to be fascinating. When that lot gets auctioned off, so when his fancy car got auctioned off, who gets the money? The owner of the facility gets to keep it, or do you have to send it back to the property owner? How does that work?
No. So when there is an auction, the owner of the self-storage facility gets the revenue from it. And so in this case, he didn't auction it. He just took the car and then he sold the car, fixed it up. There was parts in there. He fixed it up and then he sold the car.
So now everybody's going to want to go buy a self-storage unit because you never know when some dude's going to stop paying on his unit. It would never occur to me to park a car inside a unit, because I've seen the ones that have RV parking, and that seems to be a growing trend. Are you seeing that on the architecture side of self-storage, that there's more of the large toy space outside in addition to the lockers that we're used to?
Well, generally speaking, we have facilities that are more urban and then we have some that are more rural. And the urban ones are, we have like 500,000 people that live within 3 miles, and they all, 66% of them are renters. And so they're small rentals and they need a little extra space. And in those, you actually walk into the facility, you can drive into the facility, the doors come down And then you use a cart to go to your space because we have 700 units. And so, you know, in those cases, there's typically not a car in them because you can't drive the car through the building. But the adult toys are more of the rural areas. And so we are actually developing a facility in Michigan right now that will be a combination of outdoor lockers plus RV and boat storage. There's a big demand for that, especially in the seasonal areas. You know, North Carolina, I would be boating all year round there, but up in Michigan, the Great Lakes tend to freeze over a little bit and it makes it a little harder.
Our lakes don't freeze. And so if you come buy something here, you might get chilly out there, but you can still ride in your boat. All right. So if somebody's going to get into self-storage, what's the best way to get into the business? Is it joining an investment group? Is it building their own? How much does it take to get in and how do they best navigate that space?
There are three classes. And I would say that the classes are different in terms of how you were describing a little bit before. So Class C would be more rural, smaller, first generation self-storage. Typically what you would think in your mind when you think of self-storage. And, you know, that would be like a penny stock. Class B would be more suburban and between like 300 and 400 units, maybe 200 to 400 units, and maybe climate controlled and have a fence around it. That would be Class B. And we see that as a blue chip stock. And then Class A would be urban, where you drive into the facility larger, typically above 400 units, 400 to 1,000 units. And those are Class A. And we see those as growth stocks. So the first thing is to really identify what you want out of your investment. Are you looking to be an owner operator? Are you just looking to be passive income? And so once you've identified those sorts of things, then you can go after your classes. So if you're looking to be an owner operator, a Class C or B would be a good place to start. And there's great financing options, especially with the SBA, where you only have to put down 10%. And so you could probably pick up a facility for $1 million and put down $100,000 and be able to, you know, cash flow or improve them. I mean, we just bought a facility that would be a Class B facility in Michigan, where it's around 350 units. And we spent just over $2.5 million on the facility. And so we evaluated it that the rents were 30% below market. So we're just going to go in and raise rents. And then once it's stabilized at the higher rent rate, we're going to turn around and flip the facility.
So when you're evaluating a property, how do you run the numbers on a storage facility? Is it the same way as in multifamily with the leases that are in place and the percentage of occupancy, or are there other factors at play?
Yeah, that part is exactly similar to multifamily. So we're looking at gross potential income, then we're looking at the adjusted income and then our expenses to get our NOI. But instead of multifamily, where the expense ratio is around 55%, we see self-storage being anywhere from 25 to 35%. So that facility in Michigan, we won't have anybody on site. We're going to be running it completely remote and online. And so we'll have people go there and make sure it's clean, make sure the locks are overlocked and stuff like that, but like once or twice a week, but we won't have any full-time staff on site.
Well, that's kind of crazy. Is that the perk of technology? Do they get in with an app or with their code? And why don't you have somebody on site to sell the boxes and locks? Is that not the revenue stream that it used to be?
In this case, for that facility, we won't have that much revenue off of that. So the bigger one is tenant insurance. And so we're implementing a tenant insurance program that you either have to buy it or you have to prove that you have it. And so that is our largest source of revenue. But in each of our facilities, there is a keypad where you enter in your code. And so we know exactly who's going into our facility. The gate will open. And then we have cameras everywhere. And there were some benefits to COVID, ironically, you know, to state it that way. I know it was a very difficult time for our country. But one of the benefits for self-storage was the fact that everything went online in terms of contactless contracts and papers and all those sorts of things. And so all the payments, all the contracts are all online. And so we don't have to worry about having someone sign a contract. It can be done on paper.
I like that you're looking for the upshot there. Good job.
Yeah.
All right. So if somebody wants to reach out to you and find out more about what your investment group is doing in multifamily and what they could learn from you and invest with you, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Well, two things, Leah. One, I would like to say we have two gifts for your listeners. If they mention the podcast, if they email us, at info@codamg.com. That's info@codamg.com. We have two things for them. One is a self-storage deal analyzer. So you can go in and there's an assumption tab and you can just put in the information that you know, and then it will run all the calculations for you. So you can see how strong of the investment that it is. The second thing is that we have a self-storage feasibility study. So whenever we look at a new property, whenever we look at a new location, we run a feasibility study that tells us how strong the market is, how much demand, you know, what are the market conditions? What are the rental prices? And so unlike multifamily, we will know all the statistics of the market when we go into it. So we know if it's a strong market or a weak market. And so we will give an example of that to your listeners. And so that way they can learn overall about the market, about self-storage. So between those two tools, we're happy to provide those to your listeners.
So there you go, friends. Free stuff, yay, before you spend your money, double yay, because if you know anything about the crazy stuff in real estate, more education reduces the level of craziness, but it never, ever makes it all go away. Scott, thank you so much for coming on the show and giving us some backsights and information that we can all take forward and do some cool things with.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right. If you enjoyed what Scott shared and you appreciate his red jacket, drop him some love in the comments. Make sure you hit subscribe, hit the bell, click on here for more love, and we'll see you next time on Crazy Shit in Real Estate.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.